This week, the United States Supreme Court took up a case between Vernon Hugh Bowman, an Indiana farmer, and Monsanto over patent rights, in particular over Roundup Ready, or the glyphosate resistance, and whether or not a self-replicating gene or patent might or might not be able to exhaust its patent. To help explain what that means and what the outcomes potentially might be, we've invited Brian Endrist, legal scholar at the University of Illinois and the College of ACES, to join us. Thank you so much, Brian. Can you tell me a bit more about the case, please?
Well, it was an interesting case because the seeds that Mr. Bowman planted were from the grain elevator. So they were commodity seeds as opposed to the seeds that you would normally buy from the seed dealer. And he was arguing that because these were in essence the third generation of seeds, any sort of patent rights that Monsanto would have had on these seeds were exhausted. So just to be clear, the first generation would be the seeds that Monsanto grows or contracts for growing, and then sells to the farmer through the network of seed dealers to plant and grow. The second generation of seeds are the seeds that everyone is planting and then sold to the grain elevator. And then it's this third generation of seeds. What do we do with those? Is there still patent? Do patent rights still exist on those third generations? Or has the patent been exhausted?
So explain what is patented about these seeds. It's not the seed itself. It's a technology within a seed or a gene.
Well, that's a tough question, Todd, because a single seed will have multiple patents. There'll be, and so one of the patents would be you can really get technical here, but one of the patents would be their using of a spraying of the plant, and actually that would be a patented activity, that you're spraying Roundup on the soybean seed.
Not the glyphosate resistance itself, but the spraying?
The spraying would be one. The glyphosate resistance itself would be one. And also the fact that you are making this new seed from the seed that you planted is actually making the invention, making that patented thing. So there's all sorts of patents wrapped up in there. But the simple thing is at what point do all these exhaust because they've been sold? And or do they survive this second, third, fourth, and multiple generations on?
So they had an oral argument. What does that mean?
Yeah. Oral argument is sort of the fun, and it's the public side of the Supreme Court. But the real bulk of it is in the written briefs that are submitted beforehand. And all the parties to the case, as well as amicus, which are third parties that have an interest in this, such as the American Soybean Association, or in this case also the government of the United States itself, submitted additional briefs. But oral argument is where the two parties and the U.S. government, if it wants to intervene, which it did in this case, go and present an argument, usually about 35 minutes for each side, before the justices of the Supreme Court in front of the public gallery. And it's an exciting time. If you've ever been in Washington and there's an argument going on, it's worth stopping by just to see the theatrics.
Have you been to one?
A couple of them, yes. And, you know, the Bowman case was one I would have liked to have gone and attended, but I just couldn't get out there this time.
Okay, so you've probably read, of course, the transcript of the oral argument. Did you read some of the briefs ahead of time as well?
Some of the briefs ahead of time. And of course, read the oral argument transcripts. And it really, at this point, is about posturing. You're trying to make your arguments in a way that are compelling, not only in your particular case, but explaining to the justices what the implications are going forward. Not maybe just in agriculture, but this case, because it dealt with a self-replicating technology, soybean seeds, could have applications in the software industry, could have applications in vaccines. And so the parties are trying to position themselves on the different sides of this, whether there should be a patent right or shouldn't be a patent right. So that's some of the underlying arguments that are going on.
How long will it take the Supreme Court to come to some kind of decision, and what are the possibilities?
Well, the decisions are, the Supreme Court term starts in October and it ends in the summer. And so all of the decisions will be out by this summer. And oftentimes you'll hear on the news, the Supreme Court will save the most controversial decisions to the end. Something like campaign finance or the Defense of Marriage Act is up on review this year. So those will probably wait till the last week of the summer. This case, although it's certainly really important for the agricultural community, may not be one of those the biggest cases, so there it could come out, but it most likely wouldn't come out for a month or two. So until that happens, we'll just wait and see. As far as what could happen, that the important part of your question, well, the Bowman lost, the farmer lost at the trial court and the first court of appeals, and so it was interesting that the Supreme Court even took this case. So if the Supreme Court decides to grant Bowman the relief he's wanted, in other words, that there's no patent rights, you could certainly see an expansion of commodity seeds being planted. Or, I think Monsanto would have to relook its business practices. There would be certain upheaval in the market. If Monsanto wins, the defendant in this, or the respondent is what we'll call it in this case, if they win, well, then it'll be pretty much business as usual, in that, you know, sort of what you said in the beginning, Todd, about people just know that they can't save seeds and replant them. So that'll sort of be preserving the status quo.
They know that in the United States, but this is a multinational company selling all over the world. And brown bag seeds, or seeds that would have been saved back from a crop that was purposely bought to begin with, to plant and then redistributed on the third generation, and brown bag seed, for instance, in Argentina or Brazil or many other places across the planet, has been something that Monsanto's had to deal with.
Yeah, they've certainly had to deal with it. But keep in mind that the patent rules in the United States are different. They don't apply outside of the United States. Each country has its own system of intellectual property. And so, yeah, Monsanto's done some creative things in Brazil, particularly, with trying to maintain control of its technology.
Such as?
Well, such as they've implemented testing regimes at the elevator itself and penalties. But I think in a lot of respect, it's you have the different rules, and then you have the enforcement regime that goes along with the rules. The United States has very strong intellectual property rules, but also a really strong enforcement system for those rules. Other countries may have rules, but it's more difficult to get them enforced. And so that's where a lot of the difficulty comes into play.
And the enforcement system in this case, once Bowman lost the first two cases, he is on the line for a substantial amount of cash. I think $70,000 or $80,000.
I think it's $80,000. Yeah, $80,000 is what, or $84,000 even. He's on the line for a substantial amount.
Given he only has 300 acres, that, and probably it was one third, so 100 acres of soybeans, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, and the stakes are high, not only for Mr. Bowman, but for grain elevators that may be selling commodity seed, for Monsanto itself, of course. This is a high-stakes case.
You and I had a discussion very quickly before we opened the microphones about the difference between commodity seeds and bin-run seeds. I think much of our agricultural audience will understand a commodity seed is the one that's sold at the elevator and goes into all kinds of things, but bin-run might be saved back and actually meant to be used as the second generation or third generation planting. Did the Supreme Court understand eventually the difference between those two?
I think they eventually understood the difference, but keep in mind you have 9 justices that are dealing with a wide range of topics, and that's the job of the attorneys presenting the case, to make those justices understand through the briefs that they've written in advance, as well as through oral argument. And by the end of the argument, you could see, okay, the justices started to grasp the issue and understand what was really going on here.
When they make their decision, do you suppose they will be able to grasp that difference in the decision itself and separate the two?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident that they will, yeah. They get it right, and the decisions they craft are very, they're very precise, and they're also just not looking at resolving, again, this particular case. They're going to try to resolve it to solve this as a matter of policy going forward.
Thank you so much, Brian.
You're welcome.
Brian Endres, Ag Law Specialist at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.